Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Really, WC.
Mr. Franks, your passport is quite in order.
Well, anyone seeing you in that outfit, Moneypenny, would most certainly be discouraged from leaving the country. What can I bring you back from Holland?
A diamond? In a ring?
Would you settle for a tulip?
Yes.
Of course, he departed the role then. He sort of tried to venture out, but he was back just 4 years later, looking slightly different, perhaps you might say, for Diamonds Are Forever. But he managed to snag £1.25 million for the role, not dollars. So I think it was the biggest salary anyone had ever got for a film at the time. But he also was given a choice of two other films that from the same studio that of his choice that he wanted to do. I think one of them was possibly a Shakespeare, but Macbeth had never got made, and the other one was a bit of a flop. So I just feel a bit sorry for him. It's just like he tries to get out of Bond at this stage and do other things, and it didn't really quite work for him. And because Honor Majesty's was box office, it was nowhere near as big as You Only Live Twice. There was pressure on him to come back. To be fair to him, he used the fee to establish this Scottish International Education Trust. So again, you know, like you say, Rob, context. No one mentions that, do they? I've not heard anyone mention that since he's died. I mean, he's obviously, this is back in 71, and this is so Scottish artists could apply for funding without having to leave their country to pursue their careers. So he gets criticised because he's a Scottish nationalist that doesn't live in Scotland, but here he is setting up a fund for people who want to get on the arts, the film trail, without having to go to London, without having to go to LA. So, you know, he deserves great credit for that. And goodness me, Broccoli and Saltzman could afford him then. They could afford to give him that money to come back as Bond. But the film itself, Diamonds Are Forever, we'll be discussing it very, very soon with License to Queer. We'll go into it in massive detail. Can't wait for that. It's a really odd film. It's nothing like the ones we've mentioned so far. Harry, didn't you? You watched it quite recently, didn't you?
Yeah, I watched it just maybe last week.
Oh, right, okay.
Well, actually, yeah, I think it was about last week.
And I have my own childhood problems with the film in terms of eeriness and a sort of...
making mad pies,
kinkiness. You know, it's all a bit weird. And I think Sean Connery looks a bit weird in it as well, to be honest. I think his weight fluctuates in the film. There are scenes where he looks as trim as ever, but then, you know, scenes where less so. But more strange than that are his eyebrows. The kind of they've grown started growing downwards towards his cheeks. But other than his image, I was quite pleased with how happy he seemed. It was he's friendly and he's not like he is doing it. I know he's doing it for this fee, and he's got kind of these ulterior motives for kind of taking on the role, perhaps, but he did seem happy to be back as James Bond, and almost like he was happy to be back with the fans and doing it for the fans a little bit. So I thought there was a really good nature about his Bond. Certainly not, it didn't quite match, you know, his earlier portrayals of Bond in some ways, but I thought it was not a begrudging performance where he was just faxing it in at all. He looked like he was pleased to be on set, and also he seemed like I mentioned before, how having that weight of, you know, will anyone be able to succeed me, and, you know, it seems like in that position he feels confident that someone else will be able to take it on after him. He feels, this is my last one, and I'm quite happy about that. You know, I'm sure they'll find a successor, and I can relax into the role for one last time. So, on the actual episode where we talk about Diamonds Are Forever, there's lots to talk about, but his performance as Bond is actually quite happy and quite pleasing. And just one thing to mention as well, like before you mentioned, you know, he tried his hand at a few things in between. Even directing he'd given a go. Like I think in like 1967, you know, he's trying all these things out while he can. And there's something a little bit sad about, you know, he's spent his extra years in between films trying to do these things and nothing's quite working out for him. And it's a little bit frustrating, and, you know, I feel a bit sorry for him. And, you know, he's tried a bit of directing, nothing's quite come of that, but he kind of comes back to Bond. It's quite humbling in a way, what he does. A sort of bit of a sacrifice for him, but to do that sacrifice with such a friendly performance like he does in Diamonds Are Forever, I think is really, really touching.
Fascinating film. I'm not sure you're on that episode, Rob, first of all, so hit me, as they say in the film.
This is very interesting, this, in my head, because I find the whole film difficult to separate from a moment in my life. Yeah, so please bear this with me. Bear with me on this. Yes. And this comes back to Connery. So I think this is the best time to tell this. My Bond education started with my granddad bringing out his VHS copies of Dr. No and, you know, Goldfinger, From Russia With Love, Thunderball, all of them, you know, but mainly those first four, really. And I knew that, you know, as I collected more, we'd watch more together. And he was really more into the Connerys than anything else. But he really loved the gags of the Moore era. You know, he would howl at the gags of the Moore era. He absolutely loved it. Vividly remember him howling at, you know, going through the wedding in Live and Let Die.
Oh, yeah.
You know, on the boat. And this is not designed to be a sadness, but this is more of a, you know, I'm just going to tell it like it is. My granddad was diagnosed with a brain tumour in 2006, I think it was. And he was given 6 weeks, something like that. So we went from, you know, oh, he was all right, to, right, you've got 6 weeks with the man now. And the deterioration is going to be fierce. So it was about May time, I think, and I sacked off my second year of university. Just like, we'd got not long to go with the course, but I thought the important thing was I wanted to be with my granddad. So I'd go and spend time with him at the hospice, and I took, you know, one of those old units that is a 12-inch television and a VHS player.
Oh, yeah, combi.
Yeah, combi. I took it to his room, and I'd go every afternoon and sit and watch Connery Bond films with him.
Oh.
Because he just loved them, and it was comforting for him, and, you know, he was deteriorating hugely at the time. And we were watching Diamonds Are Forever one day, and he was laughing throughout it, and it was at one of the oil rig scenes, but he turned to me and he pointed at Sean Connery and said, "Who's that?" Oh. And that was when I knew that this was it. You know, like, this was literally it. And it busted me. You know, hearing him say that, after all the love, you know, because I write books because of him. You know, that's why I do what I do now. And as sad as that moment was, we had Connery with us through it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's absolutely mad. So I cannot separate it. I think, objectively, Diamonds Are Forever is riddled with flaws. Because I remember we watched the end holding hands and I said, you know, Grandad, that's James Bond. And he went, oh, yeah. You know, and but objectively, yeah, it's riddled with flaws. I think it's dead weird. But I can't take away this moment in my life that's so important where I was holding Grandad's hands watching the end of Diamonds Are Forever when he forgot who James Bond was. You know, so yeah, it's so important in my head, that moment, that I don't actually have any cogent opinion on the film at all. I don't at all. But that was a moment. You know, we were talking about father and son moments. That was grandfather and grandson moment, that, where Bond united us. And he didn't know what he was watching by that point, but he was still enjoying it. Mm. You know, so it's very poignant to me. I'm very glad I managed to get through that without getting upset.
You're right.
To be honest.
I think the rest of us are going to cry. I didn't know that. That's amazing.
No, I don't. Well, there's never really a forum to talk about it. Like, do you have any key life memories of Diamonds Are Forever, Rob? Not really.
Not expecting that for this film. Yeah. But how amazing that you had that relationship with your granddad where you love the Connery Bonds and watching Bond films together.
Yeah, yeah.
Absolutely.
Means everything to me, that moment. So this film does, because of that.
Even though, you know, stuff might have been showing a little bit too much cheek. It might have been something like that.
I think, you know, the expression at times is profoundly stupid. It's an expression that could be levelled at this film. But no, it's immortal to me.
Math, Diamonds Are Forever.
Yeah, I do find it weird. I remember finding it a bit weird when I was a kid. But I still enjoyed it as a kid. I find some of it quite scary.
It's a horror.
Yeah, there are some really disturbing things in there. There are some good moments.
James Bond, what is going on? I agree.
No, I know. It's really bizarre. It's bizarre.
The old woman being pulled out of the river. I mean,
And it's really weird to think that it followed on a Manchester Secret Service, but it sort of makes sense a bit because they wanted to go a bit more, you know, funny and campy and stuff. But by the same time, you know, by the same token, there were some dark moments, as I just said. And I think there's some really good elements to it. We mentioned in the Henchman episode about how good Winston Kidd are. So much so that they're better villains than Blofeld. Who isn't great in it, and obviously is in drag for one inexplicable scene. So I don't know. I mean, I don't think it's probably near the bottom for me. I feel a bit bad saying that, but I always enjoyed. Even watching it recently, I enjoyed it. So you know, I'm not going to lambast it.
There's talk of him being, you know, physically pasted by them, but the fight with Peter Franks.
Yeah, that's so good.
Oh yeah, it's such a good fight.
You just killed James Bond.
Yeah, this is the pinnacle in the whole series of where everyone knows who he is.
Yeah, yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah, the Moore era started much more serious than the film he took over from.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It was a Playboy card that he was given as well, wasn't it? Probably complimentary after the interview.
Got the scoop out of you, yeah.
There's really only so much you can do in terms of trying to change their view of something. And a lot of people still say, hello, Mr. Bond, and, you know, like as though one has never heard it before. And because they're still making them, it'll always be there. But I did it basically for myself, you know what I mean, to get a change of job, a change of position, change of way of seeing things and doing things, especially as an actor. I just found it became very limiting. I mean, some of the stuff obviously was Fleming. I mean, there's no question, but most of the one-liners and stuff I put in the movie. Somebody that was could be capable of doing all the things like snapping the necks and firing the guns and smoking himself to death and and all the chasing and the sex, all the stuff that goes with it, but to have a kind of counterbalance of humor, so that it never really lost itself completely in that kind of serious world of spies. But it had to be, it had to believe that the guy could be dangerous.
I won't trouble Chris and John too much on their thoughts, because we will be reviewing it fairly soon. But actually, it's quite sad, isn't it, that if you think, if that's his swan song, if you, well, if you disregard Never Say Never Again, maybe it's a bit sad. And then if you include Never Say Never Again, we will talk about it a little bit now, you could say, oh, it's a bit, quite sad that his last two, particularly with Bond fans, they're not really regarded that high up. Now, you mentioned Diamond's Defenders, and on Twitter, I think Never Say Never Again seems to be a bit more popular than I was expecting, actually. I thought it would be universally derided, but it was as big as Octopussy at the time. Well, not quite. We'll discuss it a little bit now. Never Say Never Again. Growing up, you don't really know about these things. I think we said in the Octopussy episode, you watch them out of order. That one, of course, you'd realise, hang on, he looks quite old in this film. But you wouldn't really know the context and all the background and Kevin McClure and all that, of course. But it just doesn't, it doesn't quite have that sheen, does it? It doesn't quite feel like an Eon Bond film. And there are many reasons for that. But, I mean, I don't know how familiar people are with this film. I know Rob isn't, I don't think you've seen it, that you said, have you, very often. But it's, Connery is game in it, I think. He's like in a decent mood. He's not.
What are you hoping to catch?
Something about 6'2", 190 pounds, with brown eyes.
Well, why bother going to sea? Let me help you.
Mr. Bond! I say, Mr. Bond!
Catch you later, perhaps.
Right.
Nigel Smallfoot, British Embassy, Nassau.
How do you do, Nigel?
Sorry I'm late. But as you're one of these undercover Johnnies, I took a precaution of not being followed.
And that's why you shouted my name across the harbour.
The most recent thing I've watched of it, I mean, I don't think I've seen Diamonds Are Forever. Truly, I don't think I've seen it since that.
Oh, well, not surprising.
I don't think I've seen it since then. But I have gone on YouTube to watch the bit with Klaus Hergesheim. Because I do love a bit of G section.
Do we? So. Dear me.
Yeah. But yeah, very sad that, you know, G Unit, you know, the 50 Cent's entourage,
yeah,
didn't release an album called G Section. Feet. Yeah. Klaus Hergesheim.
Brackets checking radiation shield. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
But Never Said Ever Again, Rob. Have you? I don't know if they've ever discussed it.
I watched it once. Was absolutely disgusting. never watched it again. It's non-canon. Try.
But when did you watch it? Because I'm thinking, like, as a child, I didn't know it was non-canon quite, other than being told. Even though I will have been aware that there was, you know, certain elements missing, but I wouldn't have that wouldn't have made me think it's not a Bond. I think I saw it, you know, on recorded video as a child, probably regarded it as a James Bond film, and then wasn't able to see it for years and years. And then they obviously brought out the video series where we've talked about where all the spines of the videos matched. And then at a similar time, they did bring out Never Say Never Again on video. And it's like, whoa. It was almost like, you know, the lost tapes, kind of like, whoa. Yeah, there's wow, we can watch it.
Really,
we
really an official cover, by the way.
Yeah, like, so that's awful.
Was it that red one?
Yeah. No, the red one was better. It was like black with a sort of, what do you call the phrase, impact fonts. And him with a gun, it was dreadful.
Yeah, but I actually, you know, I think we watched it when we got it from the shop, like, you know, new Bond, probably enjoyed it. I think there's like all I can remember, because I've not seen it since, is, you know, I think there's a decent motorbike chase.
Yeah,
possibly,
yeah. Down the stairs.
A really good fight in a hotel room.
There's Pat Roach, yeah, the in the gym, because it is basically.
Yeah, in the gym, yeah, yeah.
Black leather gloves.
Yes.
Yeah! Yeah, it's quite a scary, scary fight.
I think I was, you know, bless Sean, but I do think he looked too old here.
Yeah.
In Never Say Never Again. And that's one of the reasons I thought it was, you know, even worse than Roger in View to a Kill.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Well, actually, far worse. You know, I didn't buy it for a second. Especially against the likes of, you know, Fatima Blush and Basing.
She's good. She's probably one of the best things in it, I think.
She's terrifying.
Yeah.
I was not, when I watched it, that one only time I watched it, I was sexually unprepared for.
Yeah, yeah.
Fatima Blush.
You blushed. Yeah. You blushed.
Did a little more than that. No, I'm joking. Take that out. That is a disgrace. I'm sorry. It was a joke begging to be made. I could not make it. Yeah.
Yeah, so I watched it just like on TV, so without any context, I was a bit like, gosh, Connery's looking a bit old here, and it was kind of like, and obviously not having the internet, so I couldn't look to see if this was official or not. It was just like, the scene is the same as it was in that other film, but it's not, it's like, is this a remake? I remember thinking that, and then thinking, It feels a bit like a cheese dream, or like, or like off-brand cereal, where you know it's the same, but it's not the same, and you know it deep down. It just has the taste, the packaging is not quite right, even though it's, you know, not Rice Krispies, it's called Snap, Crackle and Pop or
something. Yeah, yeah.
Exactly. Yeah.
Own brand.
It's own, yeah.
Two-stripe Adidas. Yeah.
Like a Garibaldi instead of a Garibaldi.
Yeah. But I've not seen it for years, wow. Decades. But I remember quite enjoying it. I remember thinking, oh, I like this bit with his, you know, do you have a laser watch? And I remember thinking, the baddie was quite scary, and
the baddie,
you know, there's a lot in that I quite enjoyed. But just thinking, this is weird. This is really off.
He's a completely different baddie to Largo in Thunderball. He's like more of a, even more scary than Zorin in some ways. He's just completely. I mean, he's a bit pathetic physically. He's not absolutely no threat like that, is he? But he's just an odd chap. Klaus Maria Brandauer.
You can rent it in HD on Amazon Prime right now for £3.49, or buy it for £4.99. I didn't know, directed by Irving Kirshner.
Yeah.
Flipping heck, I did not know that.
John, have you? When was the last time you? Dare I ask? Have you seen it more than once?
I have only managed to complete it once.
See,
I used to go on holiday to Jersey when I was younger, and we used to go to a Christian hotel, and the idea was that all the kids would gather there and they could stay in the foyer and at night time and like just watch a film, and all the parents go up to, like, they had a church up at the top of the hotel, and it was like they had a service every night, and we just got put down there with a load of Northern Irish kids, and we just sat there, and we turned on ITV, and Never Say Never started.
Brilliant.
And we were like, "What's this?" Because I was about 10 at the time. I'm like, "What is this?" And
what is this?
No. We started it.
It's a very good
and
question.
The theme tune came on, and we were all like, "This is brilliant." I've got to be honest. Like, and we were like, "This is great." And then within 10 minutes, we were all bored. Absolutely wrong. And all I remember of this film is vividly now, whenever I think of this film, is this Northern Irish 10-year-old called Mark singing at the top of his voice, "Never, never seen, never again," over and over again. Having this proper Northern Irish accent going on. That wasn't Northern Irish, but you know what I mean.
Yeah.
But, And that is all I've ever remembered. And I've always thought, so I got it on the video. I got it on the red video when it came out. I thought, I'm going to get through this. And I've never, ever been able to get through it. I find it just so, there's no joy in it at all. I don't know what it is. And I've never got, I always give up at Mr. Bean turning up because that was the show.
With his slightly weird voice in it.
Yeah, but... What? I have some like kind
Mr.
of
Bean's
vague memory.
Yeah, Rowan Atkinson's
in it.
Yeah.
Honestly,
he looks older than he does now.
But
No, he isn't. There is a Q who's just basically a guy in a coat with white hair with no personality. Yeah. No, he's somebody else. No. There is a guy in a Q like with spectacles, isn't there? And he's a bit weird.
Yeah.
Yeah, it doesn't work that. Yeah.
And isn't Max von Sydow?
Yeah.
Blofeld.
Very faithful.
I mean, on paper, that should be the best Blofeld we've ever had. But you know, like, so there's that. But I have this vague memory, and it's not since Jersey. Is there something like a laser game battle?
Yeah, that is very odd.
Something like that.
It's quite tense, that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
like Battleship.
Yeah. Like the baddie and him in dinner jackets. Yeah, it's quite like, and then he goes, ah! At the end of it. So scary. There's like these weird childhood memories.
Yeah, that's what it is for me. I haven't watched it for years, but I've seen bits of it. It's quite sexual. There's quite a lot of particularly Fatima Blush, she's really good, but she's quite sexual in it. It's strange. There's a bit where he's in those denim dungarees, which isn't particularly nice. And also where him and Domino, Basinger, they're on a horse and they jump off a...
Yeah, that,
yeah,
is,
that is
crazy.
Which is a bit weird.
Is he in dungarees because they didn't have rights to wardrobe or
something? John Barry is just absent, massively absent. The score by Marvin Hamlisch is pretty poor, but he's a brilliant... not Marvin Hamlisch, sorry, it's Michel Legrand. He's a superb composer, but again, a bit like Thomas Newman, he's more sort of whimsical, romantic comedy type guy. The action music is appalling, but the rest of the music's quite good.
Diamonds Are Forever has a few of these problems where it's so different from Bond, it feels quite unofficial in places. With the fight with Blofeld at the end, and it's all quite unusual, but at least it had John Barry's music sort of rescuing it.
The Gorillaz,
but like you say, to not have Barry, that's a big...
I think, guys, we do need to see it again. We really do, just to do it proper justice. But it's funny when you've seen a lot of photographs on obituaries and tributes to Sean Connery, and a lot of them are using that, the shot of him in the Never Say Never Again soon. You're like, I don't think he would have wanted you to choose that one.
That's so unfortunate.
But amazingly, we'll move on to his non-Bond stuff now, but he looks so much in better shape in the mid-90s, doesn't he? I mean, it's just incredible.
Yeah.
Like, he just looks fitter, healthier, more believable. Although Bond had made Sean a star, he grew tired of the role and the pressure the franchise put on him, saying he was fed up to hear with the whole Bond bit, and I've always hated that damn James Bond, I'd like to kill him. Sounds a little bit like Daniel Craig's views at times. Friend Michael Caine said, if you were his friend in these early days, you didn't raise the subject of Bond. He was and is a much better actor than just playing James Bond, but he became synonymous with Bond. He'd be walking down the street and people would say, look, there's James Bond. That was particularly upsetting to him. While making the Bond films, Connery worked with Alfred Hitchcock in Marnie and with Sidney Lumet in The Hill. He'd worked with the acclaimed director a further four times in his career on The Anderson Tapes, The Offence, Murder on the Orient Express and Family Business. He made a succession of historical films in the 1970s, The Wind and the Lion, Robin and Marion, The First Great Train Robbery and The Man Who Would Be King. For this latter film, he acted alongside Michael Caine, and both men have described it as their favourite film. Other notable, albeit not particularly successful films of the period included A Bridge Too Far, Time Bandits, Outland, and Chris Goldie's favourite, Zardoz. After his return as Bond in Never Say Never Again, he became disillusioned and took 2 years away from the cinema. But he returned mightily as a Franciscan friar turned sleuth in The Name of the Rose, and won a BAFTA for Best Actor. This marked a long and continued return to the top for Sean. He had a trio of memorable roles in the late 80s with Highlander, The Untouchables, for which he won the Oscar for Best Supporting Actor, and as Indiana Jones' father
in The Last Crusade, which also earned him BAFTA and Golden Globe nominations. His popularity continued into the 90s with box office hits The Hunt for Red October, which he got another BAFTA nomination, The Russia House, Rising Sun, The Rock and Entrapment. He also cameoed as Richard the Lionheart in Robin Hood Prince of Thieves and voiced Drago the Dragon in Dragonheart. He also starred as an ageing but still ridiculously charismatic King Arthur in First Knight, as well as the Avengers remake, which was a critical and commercial disaster. But after more rave reviews for Finding Forrester, things came to a head with The League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, where his falling out with director Stephen Norrington and his frustration at the Hollywood process led to his premature retirement from acting. He famously declined returns as Gandalf in the Lord of the Rings series, which in the deal offered would have earned him nearly $500 million. He also turned down the role of the Architect in the Matrix trilogy. He could not be persuaded to reprise his role as Henry Jones in the fourth Indiana Jones film, and only worked again with two voice roles, in the Scottish animation Sir Billy the Vet, and of course as Bond again in the video game of From Russia with Love.
Drinking the wine makes me feel quite sophisticated, a bit like, you know, James Bond ordering a martini.
I'd like a martini shaken, not stirred. I want it now. Don't make me wait.
I'll have a vodka martini shaken, but not stirred.
I'll have a vodka martini shaken, not stirred.
I'll have a vodka.
I'll have a vodka.
You look very worried.
So do you.
No.
You should take a look at your face.
I'll have a vodka martini shaken, not stirred.
You look like you're recovering from a stroke and learning how to get mobility again.
I'd like a vodka martini shaken, but not stirred.
I can feel my legs. It's a miracle.
Good evening. If you're enjoying Really 007 Pod, why not follow us on Facebook, Twitter and Instagram? Look us up at Really 007 Pod.
I know Chris is a massive fan of Zardoz, so I'm going to let him wipe the floor with this, please.
Well, there's a couple of films that followed Diamonds Are Forever. So the film that followed that was The Offence, which is like his third film that he did with Sidley Mann.
Yeah.
And it couldn't be further from Bond. It is... It's basically about spoiling it, but it's... He plays this detective. It's obviously set kind of early 70s, 73, 74. Set in this new town build, so everything's like modernist. It looks like the town itself looks like a set, and it's all about this paedophile.
Sheesh.
And a rapist, and it is unrelentingly dark. It is, but Connery, it was one of the first sort of films that I kind of as a teenager I thought, well, I'll seek that out because of recommendations, just because it's supposed to be this great film. I was a big fan of Sidney the Met as well, and watching it, and I thought, he can act, you know. Gets sort of dismissed as he is a film star, and he's just Connery playing Connery. But when I saw that, I thought, man alive, he can act. He was totally believer. I felt like he completely took on that role. And he's a very unpleasant character. The film is fairly unpleasant, and it is incredibly dark and unrelenting. It is the perfect kind of British kind of 70s film. It is worth seeking out, just because you've never seen Connery play anything like this. And like I say, it is very dark. Obviously, the plot is around a paedophile and a rapist. I can give you some spoilers if you like. But it's essentially him interrogating someone who he suspects is the rapist paedophile. And obviously, as he's doing this, he's having flashbacks to he's a career policeman. So you have these flashbacks to everything, all these awful things that he's seen. And it is, like I say, there's very few films like that in his catalogue. But that was one that I think if people say, oh, well, you know what Connery's like, he's just playing Connery. He gets by on his charisma and his sort of movie star, you know, kind of looks and everything else. But I would say, well, if you watch The Offence, that shows just what a great actor he actually was.
It's not really readily available, is it? I've never sort of seen it on TV or anything like that growing up. I didn't really know much about it until
I think it was it was I stumbled across it because of Sid and the Met, but I think it was shown on TV because of, I think, Mark Gatiss. Not Mark Gatiss. Mark Kermode had probably done that series that and included in that. But yeah, it's not a barrel of laughs. It's not. Let's get the popcorn and have a couple of beers watching this. But I would, if you do stumble across it and think, well, I want to see Connery in a very different light, I would definitely recommend it, because not only is it a fantastic performance, but it's a fantastic script. It's so well directed as a film. It is a highlight in his career, and it is. If I was him, I would be very proud of that as something that is an attempt, like say, and this attempt to get away from Bond. I think it worked. It bombed. It was, didn't make any money.
Not surprised.
Considering it cost nothing. But, it is well worth seeking out.
I just love that, Chris. Growing up as a teenager, I was a Sidney Lumet fan. I mean, how many people? That's super.
Yeah, I didn't get that
much. But he did five films with him, didn't he? Yeah. And I feel dreadful to say I don't think I've seen any of them, amazingly. The Never On Sea, so we got The Hill, I think was his first one, which I think a lot of people say was another great performance from him.
Yeah.
The Anderson Tapes, I've had that recorded for about 2 years now. I really should start to watch that one. The Offence, obviously. Murder on the Orient Express, which is probably the most famous of these ones with Sidney Lumet. And The Family Business from 1989. I mean, what? Did these exist, these films? But I saw he got an honorary BAFTA fellowship in 1990, I think it was. And Sidney Lumet, they had a sort of piece of him sort of saying how good he was. And he was like, I've done five films with him and I'll happily do five more. He loved, didn't do any more. But the sentiment was there. The sentiment was there. But yeah. I presume you've seen some of those. You've probably seen more of these than the rest of us, maybe, Chris. I don't know.
Yeah, I think they're all. He's like Sidney Lumet. His career, he's trying to each film. He's trying to do something different. Not a case of just churning out, which is why all those films, I think, are all quite. Like Family Business is almost like it's essentially a comedy. Murder on the Orient Express is probably one of the best Agatha Christie adaptations of that story. I think it's fun. The cast is just amazing. But yeah, and The Hill is again that performance is just he's on fire. He's like burning the screen with just this passion and charisma and just this ability to hold the screen, unlike few people can. But yeah, later on in his career, when you look at this, when there was a wilderness sort of period during the 70s, yeah. Where even though he was making kind of these the Man Who Would Be King and Robin and Marion, really great, A Bridge Too Far, fantastic films, but none of them were, because you've set the standard with Bond, you're always going to be compared. Well, Bond made X amount of money, you're never going to get that. But he made some cracking films during the 70s and the 80s, and then he started to get a bit more sort of box office, was doing great stuff, Name of the Rose, and then The Untouchables, and then from there on it was just, he was on this great streak all the way up through to late 90s.
I actually saw The Wind and the Lion the night before he died, and probably not the best one to sort of remember about. it was very odd. It's quite dated now, but again, isn't he playing some Arabic character, so that couldn't be done now. Yeah, he was the best thing in it. Yeah, so you mentioned the other one, Zardoz, Chris. Please tell us more about this. All I know is this. Rob, can you Google Zardoz and the costume? I want you to.
Can I do? Yeah. Well, to be honest, it's so fixed in pop culture that I know exactly.
Yeah. You do know, right? Yeah. Okay, yeah. But that I don't know anything else about it other than that incredible hairy body.
I'm afraid that image didn't make me want to get it, so I can't. He plays the character of Zed. It's a 1974 movie, directed by John Borman.
Oh,
5.9 out of 10 on IMDb.
Again, because that image is burning into your brain. It's difficult to get past that, but it's the 70s,
It's a different time.
Yeah, well, Borman coming off. He'd just done what's it called?
Deliverance.
The Deliverance. Obviously, yeah. That was a massive box office hit. Who would have thought, given some of the content in that film? And and had been
sounds like
an
offence, doesn't it?
And hadn't you know, he was trying to do a Lord of the Rings adaptation with the Beatles, and that fell through. So he decided, oh, I'm going to do my own thing. So John Bourne was like, threw everything at this film. And I'm not going to try and explain the plot because it's I'm not going to do it justice. But again, it is, you know, Connery is committed to it. I think he had a relatively miserable time making it, but it is brave of someone who is, you know, this is he wasn't a character actor, you know, he wasn't, you know, that he was the lead, he was, you know, handsome, he was always well, you know, turned out, but to see him in that red nappy with the long hair, the ponytail, plaited ponytail. But it is, again, a film of the 70s where it, just throwing so many ideas at it that it's fascinating. And I can see where Connery thought, there's something in this. But you could argue whether it's successful or not. I think it is. I think it deals with a lot of you know, relevant topics and themes. And I think it just has you've got to admire, I think, those films and the filmmakers, and particularly Connery, to do that, because you cannot get rid of that image, you know. And later on, he's wearing a wedding dress, and that's another thing that you'll never forget, no matter how hard you try.
Google that, please.
But Google that one.
You've got to urge all listeners here to just Google Zardoz. Like, you've got to
watch it.
Yeah.
But I would recommend if you're thinking, you know what, I want to go back and see what a great actor Connery is, and what some of the interesting body of work that he's left outside of the big films that you've seen. I think things like Zardoz, you know, and The Offence, and, you know, lesser extent, like The Russia House. Great performances in films where he's really trying to get away from just being Bond, or just being, I can play that role because I'm Sean Connery.
The 70s ones, yeah, I've seen very few of them. So there's The Wind and the Lion, which I've seen. Robin and Marion, we saw that. Math and Harry, didn't we? Again, quite an odd film. Is that the real low budget, other than they must have spent the entire budget on the actors, mustn't they? Because it's Sean Connery, Audrey Hepburn, Robert Shaw. The score is unbelievable, but John Barry, of course. Very odd. Yeah. And then there's the first great train robbery. Which sounds decent again. Is that?
Good.
That's not Lumet, is it? No.
No, that's it's Michael Crichton, the novelist. He used to be. He started off his career as a film director.
Wow. Yeah, that's underrated.
And it's really good, actually. That and Donald Sutherland is in it.
Yeah.
And it's really good. Yeah. I taped that off the TV as a kid and watched that a lot.
Yeah, we mentioned Time Bandits, which I think it was a supporting role, wasn't there? Outland. Anyone seen that?
Oh, yes.
Chris is just run through. Chris is basically young. Yeah.
Peter Hyams.
Oh, Rob.
Obviously, you know, from...
yeah, Time Cop.
Sister podcast.
Yeah.
From Time Cop.
Yeah. Sudden Death, baby. Yeah.
Hanover Street.
And the sequel to 2001.
Yeah, which is not available. You just will not
have
it.
Is it not at the moment?
Well,
it's a shame. It's actually surprisingly good, that.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was... what were we talking about now? By some of these good films.
Outland. Not Outlander.
Outlander. It's high noon set in space. So he plays a sheriff waiting for the villains to arrive at this mining camp.
Good.
And it is really good. And it's 81.
Yeah.
So it has a kind of like alien aesthetic kind of.
Oh, you know, amazing.
It's very industrial. Again, it's great. I'd definitely recommend that.
So interesting.
Yeah, such an authority, Chris.
This is superb, yeah.
Honestly, this is so good. I've learned so much in the last 10 minutes.
Chris is not 60 years old, honestly. He was grown up back in New Lumet on his poster of him on his bedroom. Obviously, Never Say Never Again. I think apparently he became disillusioned with cinema and he took 2 years off after that. Didn't do anything for 2 years. He then came back for In the Name of the Rose and he won a BAFTA for Best Actor. As the Franciscan sleuth, the friar, in that. And again, I assume only Chris has seen this film.
The Name of the Rose.
Yeah.
I've seen it.
Oh, good. Oh, good.
Yeah. I you know, medieval whodunit, which is a crisp. Yeah, I found it quite scary, actually. I keep saying I find these things scary. But, yeah. I found that quite scary. There's like a, you know, the monastery's like quite a lonely setting. There's a few characters who are quite, I don't know, disturbing. Or and F. Murray Abraham plays like, I can't remember if he's like a Catholic priest or something who comes halfway through it or something, and he's quite scary, of course. So, yeah, I was a bit disturbed by it, I think. I've basically been disturbed by every film that Sean
That's brilliant. Okay, right, so we're getting to some of the more, I don't know, prominent, should we say, in pop culture. We've got Highlander. It's basically the late 80s, mid to late 80s, where he is absolutely back on his, well, in terms of popularity, arguably up there as much as he was with Bond. So he's got Highlander, The Untouchables, which he got an Oscar for, and of course Henry Jones Sr. in Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade. And it goes into from then into the 90s, it's just hit after hit. Really,
we did two Indiana Jones movies before Sean joined the family. But Sean does not just show up and read the lines. He brought ideas to the table, good ideas about plot and character, about the movie. For those of us who make movies, technically speaking, this is called being a pain in the ass. But for those of us who love movies, that passion, that wisdom, is the reason we are here tonight. One of them, at least. At some early stage, Sean told Stephen and George, look, I'm his father. Whatever he's done, I did it first, and I did it better. Did he understand the part or what? Our fathers. We endure them, we're tested by them, and then as we grow older, we gain a whole new level of respect and admiration for them. That's the nature of the relationship between Indiana Jones and his father, and as I stand here before you tonight, older and wiser, it reflects how I've come to feel about you, Sean. Part of the fun of the indie series is that they harken back to the old days, older movies, a time when movies were a window onto the world. They took us to new and exciting places, and our guides were the stars of those movies. John Wayne gave us the Old West. Jimmy Stewart gave us Our Town. But you, Sean Connery,
even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas, big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
You gave us the world.
And rare is the moment when that actor creates a character for me, for you, and for millions of people around the world, people who do not speak the same language, but they share this character, one that inhabits our most impossible dreams and influences what we'd like to wear, Turnbull and Astor with Rolex watch, what we'd like to drink, martinis shaken, not stirred, and what we'd like to drive, Aston Martin DB5. His very name is an example of this. His name is Bond, James Bond. And I was a young man of 16 when the first James Bond film opened at a drive-in movie theater with theme songs sung by Shirley Bassey, Matt Monroe, Nancy Sinatra, Tom Jones, and those wonderfully risque main title sequences. All the Bond girls you can't say in public. All the gadgets, that rocket shooting cigarette accurate at 30 yards, you remember that one? Then there were those evildoers, always seeking world domination. Now, all of this surrounding the man with a license to kill. He played James Bond in 7 films across 21 years. Every entrance, a tour de force. Every turn of his head, a suggestion of danger. And then every glance, never without that twinkle of dry Scottish humor. Now, when George Lucas and I created the Indiana Jones series, it's no secret that Bond movies were somewhere on our minds. And so when we had to cast Indiana Jones' dad, I thought, who could possibly be more adventurous and daring and dangerous and charming and more wily and wonderful than Indiana Jones? Well, James Bond, of course. Because the moment Sean Connery introduced himself as Bond, he became the man all men wanted to be and all women just wanted.
Junior, give me your other hand. I can't hold on.
I can get it. I can almost reach it, Dad.
Indiana. Indiana. Let it go.
Senior is one of the greatest characters of all time.
It is.
All time.
And I think Steven Spielberg said, who could possibly be the guy, you know, an adventurous dad, who could inspire him to do all that? And him and George Lucas created Indiana Jones because they wanted to create a new franchise, didn't they? Based sort of, wasn't James Bond. Because I think Spielberg grew up wanting to direct a Bond film. He never ever got the chance. He was like, well, let's just come up with one ourselves. So George Lucas didn't, and Daniel, was it Daniel Kaufman? They came up with the character and the story, and then they just thought, who else but Sean Connery? It is, it's amazing. And it was, I think growing up it was like, is that the same guy? Is that James Bond, Dad? Is that really him?
Yeah.
Because obviously he looks quite different to any other film we'd seen him. But he looks a lot better than he did in Diamonds Are Forever.
Harrison Ford too, like absolute heavyweights, so believable. Yeah. And apparently Spielberg wanted those back for Jurassic Park, so Harrison Ford was going to be Grant. Sean Connery, Hammond, this is another role that Sean Connery turned down. He turned down Richard Hammond.
Not Richard Hammond.
John Hammond.
The hamster.
I've got a list of the films that Sean Connery turned down, if you're interested.
Please, I want all this.
It's so funny, I've seen some.
I mean, it is massive, honestly.
Yeah.
I mean, turned down Simon Gruber, apparently.
What?
Die Hard with a Vengeance.
Sheesh.
I remember you telling me this, Matt, about him turning down Gandalf, which cost him about $450 million.
Because he had a percentage profit of the deal offered. He couldn't understand the script, so he didn't understand what it was about.
In Braveheart, they wanted him for the king.
Patrick McGoohan.
Edward
Longchamps.
He turned down the architect in the Matrix films. he turned down. And the last one, I think, he turned down Hannibal Lecter. But his reason for a lot of these, he turned down apparently Simon Gruber, Hannibal Lecter, because they were too cruel and wicked.
Yep.
Which is quite interesting because he's never really gone there, has he? Apart from, well, if, I don't know what happens in this film that you've told us about, Chris, but...
Quite a lot, obviously.
Yeah, yeah. But that's like an astonishing array of characters that he's...
Yeah.
Well, he'd already had the long hair and beard in The Rock, so I'm sure he didn't need to be doing that for 3 years in a row.
No. No one wants a grunge thing.
Greetings. I am Juan Sanchez Villalobos Ramirez, chief metallurgist to King Charles V of Spain, and I'm at your service.
Who?
Yeah, Highlander lads. Are you a fan of that?
Oh, yeah. It's fantastic. I get,
it's weird, isn't it? It's very weird.
Oh, yeah, exactly. You read that script. It's like, what on earth have you written here? It's like, you know, chopping people's heads off.
Yeah.
I'm supposed to be, what, Egyptian by way of Spain and, some, you know, all these various...
Not Scottish.
We're not Scottish.
Yeah. Mr. Sophie Marceau in the title.
Shouldn't work, but it does. I think it's such an odd, strange film, but once you've watched it, I just think, it's fantastic.
The charisma's there, though, isn't it, from Connery? Mm.
the second one I saw before the first one, and I thought it was pretty poor.
Pretty poor. Yeah, he is in that.
I like the first one. It's quite of its time, and the concept, although it's weird, I've got a lot of respect for it, because it's like, yeah, you're coming up with a new concept, and it's just. You know, there's so much you can do with it, and there's like an amazing montage. I almost got tearful. I couldn't believe it when he's in Scotland and like his wife's getting older, and he wants to live forever. I was like,
well, that's great. Song.
There's so much, well, it's absolutely brilliant, and it just works so well.
Have you seen that, John?
A very long time ago. Yeah, I've got to confess, like I've not seen mass amounts of Economy's back catalogue.
So he's obviously not as mainstream as people think, is he, with a lot of these choices?
It's the 90s blockbusters that I've probably...
Yeah, we're going to get to them, don't we?
And late 80s. I watched Hunt for Red October the other day.
Yeah.
Great film.
We're going through the Jack Ryan films as we speak, me and my wife.
Chris?
My personal favourite is Patriot Games. I think that's brilliant. And Sean Bean. And we talked about accents before, but he does a Northern Irish accent.
Yeah,
that's
great.
And not a hint of Sheffield comes through. It's brilliant. but like, back to Hunt for Red October. Once you get over the distraction that they have to say he's Lithuanian, and basically... he's speaking in pure Scottish, and I think they even make like a line that excuses it.
Go through the periscope, doesn't it? And then the shot comes back out, and it's almost like you're in a dream now. From now on, you have to accept that this is the language, because it starts off in Russian, doesn't it? And then Sam Neill.
I mean, the cast is brilliant, but he's very static in it, in terms of the... Not in a good way.
Can't go anywhere in a submarine. Unlike Gene Hackman, but perhaps.
He's just very... It's of a level, he carries an authority there throughout the film, and he doesn't have to say anything to do that. And you've got Alec Baldwin on the other side, ranting, raving, running around, trying his best, bless him. And he just doesn't match up to the greatness of Connery on the screen on that film.
He got a BAFTA nomination for that as well, underrated. He's also had a few nominations.
Actors are often asked questions they can't respond to. One of them is, what's it like to be a star? I'm asked two questions. What's it like to be a star? What's it like to work with Sean Connery? I can give you an example of both. In working on The Untouchables, we were in a street scene and a rope was
designed to keep the people back, and Sean Connery and I were engaged in a conversation back and forth, and I noticed behind him that a beautiful woman, a blonde woman, was trying to get my attention. And I thought that I would slide over there after I finished talking with Sean. So I finished talking with Sean, and I wandered over to this woman who leaned over the rope to me as I asked her, what? And she said, could you get me Sean Connery's autograph? That's what it's like to be a star next to Sean Connery. He truly has qualities that I wish that I had.
You said you wanted to know how to get Capone. Do you really want to get him? You see what I'm saying? What are you prepared to do?
Everything within the law.
And then what are you prepared to do? If you open the ball on these people, Mr. Nash, you must be prepared to go all the way. Because they won't give up the fight until one of you is dead.
I want to get Capone. I don't know how to get him.
Want to get Capone? Here's how you get him. He pulls a knife, you pull a gun. He sends one of yours to the hospital, you send one of his to the morgue. That's the Chicago way. And that's how you get Capone.
The Untouchables is another big one of the late 80s, which you got to admit. I hadn't seen it until about a year ago, amazingly. I remember I was doing jury service once, and it was on in, they were watching it in the juror's waiting room, and it was halfway through, and I'm like, I am not watching a film that is this important, with a load of people chatting to me, eating crisps, you know, the tannoy going on about cases being read out. Yeah, having said that, I waited quite a long time, didn't I, before I watched. I'm a massive fan of Kevin Costner, and the chemistry between those two again was superb, and he's great at that, isn't he? And it raises Costner's game, and it raised Harrison Ford's game in The Last Crusade. It's a great film.
But just it's the way these people, these icons, because Costner and Ford are absolute cinematic icons, aren't they? And they speak so fondly of him. Just eulogise about Connery and his impact on them as people and their careers. It's just lovely.
Yeah.
See, you've not seen Rising Sun?
I've seen Rising Sun.
Oh, right.
He's such a terrific presence in that film. His hair, his tan. Yeah, do yeah.
I've got a little anecdote. I've talked to friends about the news of Connery's passing, and I got a little note from someone from the book world. M. Sean Coleman is the author of the Alex Ripley series, and we were chatting about this because I know that he had a career in TV beforehand. He was sat next to him at a BBC dinner in the 90s.
Oh.
Sean, walking to the table, like his card was like, you know, like, Sean Connery, you know. And apparently he was just lovely.
Oh, very thank funny, goodness.
Very charming. Said he was working on a film with Wesley Snipes.
Oh.
Such
a good pairing again.
I know, yeah. And that they joked, the pair of them, about swapping name badges to see if anyone noticed.
Brilliant.
It's so good. So, no, it's another example. Again, another nice little story.
Yeah, that's
about,
good.
That ties in nicely with the Wesley Snipes movie.
Yeah, such good trivia. It's very little talked about, isn't it? And that and Just Cause was a couple of years later with Larry Fishburne. That's unavailable. Yeah. I've tried to find that again. It's quite difficult to find. Rising Sun's on Sky all the time, guys, if you want to watch it, whatever you want. Yeah,
that's another Crichton connection.
Yeah, it is, yeah.
Non-stop, you know.
Little cameo is Richard the Lionheart, of course, in Prince of Thieves.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
So good,
though. I remember Dad was loving that. Not too distracting.
He steals the movie. In for about 20 seconds, steals the lot.
Stunt casting. Yeah, get him back with who cares? He was only in it for. Come on.
Is this the only time that stunt casting has worked?
Yeah. I don't know. I'm sure the role. I can't believe no one's mentioned this in any memories and tributes to him. The voice of Drago.
Wait, Dragonheart.
Dragonheart, yeah. With one of the weirdest wigs in the world from Dennis Quaid.
So odd. But really enjoyable family fantasy.
Horrible, pathetic bad guy, David Thewlis, you know. So unlikable.
For Aynan to die, you have to kill me.
Yeah.
Actually, it's about the same size.
Yeah.
That's not him, that's Quaid. Quaid!
It's amazing, though, actually. Like, the digital animation to make a dragon's mouth look like it's got Sean Connery's voice. You know how you can tell someone's voice by how their lips move?
Oh, yeah.
They've done it with a dragon. Amazing feat.
I remember seeing that at the cinema. Again, probably because it was Sean Connery.
I have no pride left in me. What I do now, I do for my people and for Camelot. And may they forgive me. This is my last act as your king. Do not be afraid. All things change. I am Arthur of Camelot. And I command you now, all, to fight! Fight!
I do not fight before! Never surrender! Never surrender! Fight! Do you never... No! Camelot lives!
My favourite... Sorry, unashamedly, his... We'll get to The Rock, obviously that's my other favourite, but the underrated favourite has got to be First Knight. It's just, honestly, I watched it again on Blu-ray about a few weeks ago, and it's just got everything. I mean, I love sort of a romance, and a bit like Indecent Proposal, it's that kind of, where there's, you know, what would you do in that situation, who'd you back? It's like a love triangle, but you sympathise with each of the characters. I mean, is it a family film? I don't understand. Watch this. We just watched it because we love knights, playing as knights as kids, sword fights, and it's got all that. It's got all the. It's quite violent for a PG.
It's the armour they wear, though. It's so nice, the Richard Gere stuff. Yeah. But then seeing an old Sean Connery wearing the armour with almost shaved head.
I'm really familiar with the music because Sky for the last 15 years have used it on their Ryder Cup coverage.
They have.
And we'll be back in a couple of moments to see if Europe can bring home the Ryder Cup. But no context for
me. Have you seen it, John and Chris?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, Chris?
Yeah.
Julia Ormond is fantastic.
Yeah,
absolutely brilliant. Gear's hair is interesting. But I can understand I'm falling in love with all three of them in this film. Jennifer, goodness me, I mean, that's her peak Connery age as well. It's just, he looks, I mean, just think that's a wig. It looks incredible, doesn't it?
Watching this as a child, it was this like cluster of films, 95 First Knight, then 96 Dragonheart and The Rock. And it's like, we've kind of said it before, but like Renee, like he's completely a different actor. You love Bond Connery, and you love this new Connery, and there are two different Conneries that you love going on at the same time, because whilst you're watching him in these films in the 90s, you're also going home and watching Bonds with him in. It's like you've got these two different, as a child, we had these two different Conneries running alongside each other. It's amazing.
Because we didn't really get the films in between like Chris might have done. Unless, you presume you saw them later though, Chris, didn't you? But so it's like almost, you keep having to remind yourself, it is the same guy. Because especially in Last Crusade, because he is bald in that, and the beard. The beard was the big thing. He was like, whoa.
And he does play like an old man, doesn't he? He's kind of a jittering kind of...
The physical performance.
But we believe totally that he bedded Alison Doody.
But I think when Connery got rid of the hair piece and let the grey come through and grew the beard, he looked the same for about 2 decades.
Yeah, he did, yeah.
It felt like he didn't age at all.
Name and rank, sailor.
Army, actually.
Answer the question and address him as General Sir.
Captain John Patrick Mason, General Sir of Her Majesty's SAS. Retired, of course.
You're a long way from home, Captain. How the hell are you involved in this?
Oh, I have a unique knowledge of this prison facility. I was formerly a guest here.
Did they bother to tell you who I am, why I'm doing this? Are they just using you like they do everybody else?
All I know is you were big in Vietnam. I saw the highlights on television.
And you wouldn't have any fucking idea what it means to lead some of the finest men on God's earth into battle and then see their memory betrayed by their own fucking government.
I don't quite see how you cherish the memory of the dead by killing another million. And this is not combat. It's an act of lunacy, General Sir. Personally, I think you're a fucking idiot.
Welcome to The Rock. Michael Bay gets real bad press, but he can direct a film. Good grief. Fantastic directing in this film.
Love it.
Surely. Action comedies. Goodness me.
This is his best one by far.
Yeah,
that's what I think, anyway.
I think few would disagree.
Yeah. Very fair point, that.
But yeah, how good is Connery in it, though? He's absolutely brilliant.
Oh, he's brilliant. Yeah, the whole thing's faultless. I mean, it's faultless.
Two hilarious actors with each other. I wonder whether they got
brilliant
on.
Brilliant together. I mean, yeah. Like they're so good together. Yeah. Connery and Cage. I mean, you want the best actors of their generations to go toe to toe. Exactly what you're saying. Yeah. Why are you laughing?
They both won Oscars. You can't be laughing at this.
You can't say they're not great.
They're genuine film
stars. One believes in, you know, certain domestic issues. The other one buys T-Rexes on the Mongolian block market. So, you know.
I didn't know Ed Harris was into that, Rob. I didn't know.
Hummel gets the rocket.
Does he? Yeah.
Did you read some of the anecdotes of Connery during the making of the movie?
Oh, go on.
He'd been shown Bad Boys and he thought it's very American, it's not really for me. When it came to the script, he got Lefrain and the guys who wrote Porridge and did like loads of stuff. He got them
Ian Lefrain
to rewrite all his stuff, and that's why you get so many great one-liners.
They had a career of that in Hollywood. They had quite a run, amazingly. The writers of Porridge and like script doctors for comedy stuff. Yeah.
That's incredible. Yeah.
And during the production, him and Bay would maybe didn't quite see like,
that's happened a few times.
Where Bay gave him some direction and sort of questioned something, and Connery just turned around and said, "Shouldn't you be blowing up a bridge?"
That's
super.
And then on the interview that he did with Mark Cousins, he talked about that because I think it was one of the last films he released, and he said, "Oh yeah," because he talked about how he was directed and stuff. And he said, "Oh," he sort of implied that it was saved in the edit, that it was very much kind of when they were making it, it was a real mess. But he's quite proud of it actually. He thought it was a really good film.
Oh, good.
And there's all those rumours, isn't he, that essentially he's just Bond in prison.
That suggestion is so good.
Yeah,
but it really works. And that little spectre, again, awful pun, hanging over the film, that is this Bond who finally the authorities caught up with him and chucked him in there. No, it's fabulous. But it's a brilliant role. I mean, like, it's that kind of high concept role that any actor would absolutely jump. But, you know, I find that fascinating about the Porridge writers, though. Because that line, I mean, he says about, you know, when losers whine about their best. It's one of the best lines in the 90s. It just is. about what happens to the prom queen afterwards. You know, it's absolutely superb.
You get to hear him swear as well.
Yes. F bombs from Conrad.
Yes. Yeah, it's difficult.
Yeah. Mum, I don't James Bond Mummy. Swearing. It's not the same James Bond. It's the, you know, Indiana Jones' dad swearing.
Are you watching the View to the View to the Kill outtakes? Is that what you're watching?
And then, yeah, Avengers will, you know, no idea. So that was a bit. It ended a bit sadly because he had the Avengers. He Finding Forrester, I've not seen, but he had good reviews for that. But then Leave Extraordinary Gentlemen, just what a sad way to go out. You know, he sort of
that was it,
fell
wasn't
out with
it?
The director.
Yeah. So
couldn't be bothered anymore with all this, the CGI visual effects. And that sort of whole way of making a film is so different, isn't it, to what he was used to by then. That was it, and he never came back. So, like Gene Hackman retired in 2003 as well to write detective novels. So, yeah.
Nice. Who did?
Gene Hackman. In his retirement, yeah. He's written novels.
Modern day or set in the Western?
Yeah, you presume it's all linked, isn't it, with Costner and, you know, the West and all, you know, gunslingers and cops. And,
yeah. Is it set during a gunslinging World Cup?
Yeah. Quick and the Dead is a sports film.
So it's, I don't know, it's a bit.
Apparently, the last thing on IMDb is last entries of voice in 2012, Sir Billy. Like sort of a Scottish animation.
Can you read out some of the reviews from IMDb?
Okay, you fill some time whilst I find some.
Yeah, the only other the other thing he turned out for was, as we mentioned, the From Russia with Love game, as an aging Bond, but still set in the '60s. So he was in his 70s by then. Name's Bond, James Bond.
Right, do you want these reviews?
Yeah, just a couple, all right.
This is for his last appearance, bless him, in 2012 as a voice artist for the film called Sir Billy. I think, yeah, it's like a
favour or something.
It's like an animated Scottish film. These are difficult times we live in, I know, but this is your homeland's first animated feature, and I found it almost as radioactive as just about every other movie on the Red Box. I might not be an animation guru, but this entire thing has the appearance of a late... that one goes on quite... I'll give you the one-liners. That one, it's 1 star out of 10. You have one job to do.
That's it.
And then the one after it is 1 out of 10. This will leave you physically nauseated.
Quick, get it, lads. Amazon, quick.
Lots of 1s out of 10, but then 1 10 out of 10 with the headline... Oh. Never been more shaken.
Good night, sir.
Yeah. Sir Billy. That's Billy with an I.
Yeah, it's so weird. Big Tam playing Billy.
One of the reviews. Sorry, Harry. When you started, yeah, it's the I most couldn't believe it was you. Real. Yeah. So I was like, this cannot be real. One of the other reviews, it says 1 out of 10. Sean Connery deserved a much better comeback than this. You know. He was in his 80s. Yeah. Come back.
I don't
what?
Think he was intending on, you know, a 10 film run. You
this
know,
wasn't his you know, tentative first steps back into the pool.
Sir Billy, the vet. What on earth? So made up, man. He was honoured with a Cecil B. DeMille Award at the Golden Globes, which is like the honorary Oscar, but for the Golden Globes. Got a BAFTA Fellowship. He was knighted in 2000. He's been voted the greatest living Scot and Scotland's greatest living national treasure. These are quite interesting as well. He was voted Sexiest Man Alive by People magazine in 1989, and he was voted Sexiest Man of the Century in 1999.
Oof.
So Jennifer is right, you know. And he was 69 at the time, so there you go. The guy was a stunner, wasn't he? Yeah, couple of interesting facts about Sean, just to end with. Rob, you like this? He was a massive golf fan. Massive golf fan, as we know.
My man.
The national sport of Scotland, baby. He was a Rangers fan. Didn't know that, yeah.
Cool.
And he was an honorary rank of Shodan in karate.
Honorary?
Yeah. Yeah, but surely he was probably decent. You know. He went to Japan and to film.
That's it.
Yeah. Well, the other, Thomas Sean Connery. You know, he shares my name. Yeah.
Deeply underrated.
Big time.
Way back in the summer of 72, I took my son Jeffrey, who was then, I think, about seven, for a man-to-man lunch at the old White Elephant. And we were sitting in the back room, and my son at that age was preoccupied, as most boys are, whether their dad was bigger and stronger than anybody else. So he said, "Dad, could you beat anybody up in here?" Well, in those days, I didn't wear glasses, so I looked around the room, and they all looked fairly old. I said, "Sure, I could beat up anybody here." He said, "But what about if James Bond came in?" I said, "Well, I'm going to be James Bond." He said, "No, but I mean the real one, Sean Connery." Needless to say, my son has not grown very tall. But for me, it was an honor, Sean, to fill your shoes. And if you've got any other old ones lying around, I'd be very grateful.
I was asked if I'd be interested twice, which isn't quite the same thing as having an offer. The first time was many years ago when Sean gave up the part. And I thought he was terrific. He was splendid. I'd seen Sean Connery in my local cinema back home as a kid. I'd sneaked in. I was underage. There were 16-year-old films then. And I thought he was great. I couldn't take
over. Was that Dr. No, the first one that we were talking about? Yeah.
Yeah, that's my favorite.
I had just left the wild countryside of Ireland and moved to London. The very first week I was there, my parents took me to the pictures, as we called them then. This was not unusual in itself. We went to the movies a great deal in Ireland. But that day was different, because the movie was Goldfinger. Now, I had grown up watching black and white movies, but this picture was in Technicolor. And the image of that half-naked woman painted in gold was etched deeply in my 11-year-old Catholic psyche. But most importantly, that was the first time I'd seen Sean Connery. Yes, his character was suave and sophisticated, dangerous and sexy. But I also knew that the actor was a Scotsman. And the message that sends to a proud young Celtic kid is immeasurable. Time marched on, and years later I was filming The World Is Not Enough. One day I had to shoot this massive stunt, a big fireball sequence. The shot required me to hang on these wires as this ferocious fireball came hurtling down behind me, and of course do it all like James Bond would do it. Anyway, I did it, and we got the take, and I was dismissed for the day. But out in the parking lot, as I was putting my gear into the back of the car, I looked up, and there was the big man, Sean Connery, standing there right in front of me. And he said, "I've just seen what you did there. Very good." I was silent. And then he asked me a question, one that has stayed with me to this very day. He said, "Are they paying you enough money?" Well, I'm not sure if I answered, and it didn't really matter, because the great man had seen me do my bit of Bond. And then he was gone. Sean, I have walked in your cinematic footsteps and danced in the shadow you have cast on film history. As an actor, I carry you both in my head and in my heart. You're a man who has marched to his own drum, who has created his own legend far greater than Bond, and who has done mighty work that will be cherished forever. And in many ways, I am still that 11-year-old boy, awash in the image of you and Goldfinger and all the dreams that the movies give us. Mine have come true, in large part thanks to you."
So guys, right, to conclude, we've just got time, I think. Which of his favourite Bond films, which is your favourite of his performance or favourite film in general? I'll start with you, John.
I'd probably just about go from Russia with Love.
Oh.
Love Russia with Love, love Goldfinger. They're the two that are absolutely up there. But I'm going to go from Russia with Love. I still think it's his best performance. I don't think it's... I think he is far more of a movie star in Goldfinger. But as we did the review of From Russia with Love and we looked into the subtleties that he goes through, I think that film really shows what a great actor Sean Connery is. And just a cracking film, cracking performance. He's the star. He's brilliant.
Do you agree, Harry? Because, you know, when we've gone through these reviews, we say it's not come out yet, but the World Is Not Enough review, every film we've watched, you just find a new love for it. And you appreciate it more, perhaps, than we did. And is that with From Rush With Love? I don't know whether that's your favourite.
Well, yeah, absolutely. What he did in Doctor No is great and all that, but there's something also sometimes quite special about the second outing, the second movie, this where he's established himself, but by the second, he's absolutely embracing the role, but not in a scene-chewing way that's a distraction, but one that gets to the heart of the story and the heart of the character. And he, if you've not listened to that episode, we, you know, analyse that film so much, and if anyone goes and watches it now with the sad news of Sean passing, watching that film and appreciating what a job he does as Sean, as James Bond, in that mission, in that story. I like a lot of his other outings as Bond, but it has to be From Rush With Love for me as well.
Chris, do you reckon so?
Yep, absolutely. I think it's like you said, it's the second film. It's not a fluke.
You know
that performance. That everything about it isn't a fluke. He is James Bond, and that performance in that film is everything.
Brilliant. And is anyone going to say something else just to be interesting? Other than no, Joe.
I'll chuck Goldfinger and Thunderball just in the mix. When I've watched Thunderball recently, I've always thought how good he is. I don't know how good he looks in it and how much of a presence he is. And I just even love every time I see it. You know, at the end when Largo's about to kill him, and then Domino shoots him from behind with the harpoon, and she says, "I'm glad I killed him." And Bond says, "You're glad." I just love that line so much. But you know, it's not one of those where it completely reduces a dramatic moment. But I just really like that. And I think any of these you could say any of the first four. But yeah, I've got a real soft spot for Thunderball. And obviously, like I said, Goldfinger's like absolute peak. Sean Connery is James Bond. You know, the world is absolutely loving all this at the moment, and it's hard to look beyond those.
There's so many scenes just in Goldfinger that we didn't mention. Like the golf scene, I mean, how good is he in that? He's absolutely brilliant.
Oh, yeah.
And then the fight with Oddjob. It's just, like, I think, do we mention in the Henchman episode, I think, we mentioned that you can see him sweating and struggling, and it's a real physical strain to beat this guy, and he uses his wits, and yeah, it's just totally believable. Goldfinger, I'm sorry, but it's... Stop having a go at it. Rob, what do you reckon? It's a difficult question, isn't it, really? But...
Yeah, very much so, but I'm still... I think the first Bond film I watched was Doctor
No. Oh, right, okay.
So I still think, Doctor No. I think the whole thing, the love for this whole thing, the reason we're sitting here is all down to that one movie. And that one opening. I love everything that came from it. And I think From Russia With Love is a better film. I think from there, Goldfinger's a better Bond film. Arguably, it all for me hinges on from Doctor No. So, yeah.
From Doctor No, awful.
Yeah. Useless, absolutely useless. But you could give me any of them opening four to watch on a weekend. And I'm happy. Well, no, I'm not just happy, I'm delighted.
And he's like the main draw, isn't he, of Doctor No?
He's
just astonishing.
Yeah. He's brilliant. He's just absolutely brilliant.
Sheesh.
I just wish, now having talked about it, I wish I'd been, like we were talking before about being this age. Or not this age.
Yeah.
No one wants to be 37 back then, you know. I'd be deep into me 80s. but if I was 10, you know, like my dad. If I was my dad... Yeah, watching this for the first time, I mean, I can only imagine the excitement. Really can.
Yeah.
Sorry, Rob, just from what you said about watching them first four, I really think once this lockdown's over, we should have a weekend where we should just all watch all those four together. You know,
brilliant idea.
You know, when you just set it there, I'm just like, five.
Five.
You know, then, well, we won't watch on messages now. Yeah, go on.
How about a Twitter watch along with our, you know, with listeners?
Oh, my word.
Forget it. Let's just get a bank holiday and have the Bond marathon. Get Michael.
Get one day on. the first five Bond movies.
No talking, just drinking.
just drinking and enjoying, and Twitter interactions with our legends, Scarpin, Zorin Industries, Leicester Queer. These guys.
Zorin Industries.
It is good though that one aspect of us marking this, you know, this sad occasion kind of is that it will hopefully create a lot of people. It will generate a lot more interest in those films that they might not have gone back to. And like I've said, From Russia with Love is my favourite, but I'd hope that people don't go back and just watch that, but they do watch all the ones around it, starting at Dr. No. And they watch. Sean Connery evolve as James Bond, and it's not a slow evolution at all. It's, you know, it's within minutes of him being on the screen, but the way they can, you know, just want people to take this opportunity now to go back and appreciate what this guy did with James Bond and kind of that whole, this whole franchise that is still going today. Oh, so much is owed to him and those initial films that he did.
Absolutely, and, you know, it's not just, it's such a big part of British culture and film culture and everything. James Bond is just such an icon, and you know the impact that has had, and Sean is massively a big, you know, hugely responsible.
I could only really just think about it, compare it almost with Christopher Reeve as Superman, in that impact of growing up just watching it. You don't even think he is Superman, isn't he? It's just that good, and everybody else is a sort of pretender to the throne, however good they are. And like Connery, he was just okay. He had the comics and there were TV serials to base it on, but he was nothing like that, was he? And it's because he's an all rounder. First of all, like you said, Harry, be good in a fight. Like Christopher Reeve is a massive guy, but he's also extremely gentle and amazing at the other scenes. And Connery is the same, isn't he? He's not just a thug. I'm not just talking about Daniel Craig. No, to be fair, Daniel Craig can act, but the humour is just spot on. The charisma, the even with women, like, it doesn't feel forced or awkward. It doesn't feel like he's being inappropriate. Obviously, you know, there's the occasional slap in the arse, you know, and all that sort of stuff, which is isolated, isn't it? I just mean the seduction and all that. It's, you know, that's acting. That's not just, let's get a guy who's Mr. Universe, pop him in a suit, and go on, here you go, here are your lines. It's difficult stuff. It really is, and the achievement he's made is amazing. We could go on and say, is he our best Bond? I mean, I don't know whether I would dare ask that question. Seems a bit tasteless if you say no, really, at the moment.
At the moment, it's all so fresh. And obviously, just going off the back of a conversation where I've just been reminded of all the things I love about it. You know, it would be very hard not to say that. But, I mean, he's definitely... I'd be amazed if he's not in anybody's top two or three.
Well, John... No, I'm just...
As I said, they're all top four interchangeable. I've always said that I don't think Connery's my favourite because I have my silly mathematical ways of stuff. But there is no doubt.
He's
the best.
He's never better, is he?
When Connery's, he's never been better. When Connery's on his peak, he is Bond.
I assume the rest of you agree.
I was thinking, what an amazing line to, you know, to
we'll edit that out. John, can you just, brilliant, guys. But thank you for trawling through the amazing career of Sean Connery. As James Bond, like we say, never bettered and possibly imitated a few times, but he is James Bond, he always will be James Bond. But then, of course, at the same time, he was so much more. And some of those films, we didn't really dwell too much on Indiana Jones. I mean, some of those scenes, Let It Go, Indiana, just brings a tear to my eye, yeah, just thinking about it. Yeah, he can do comedy in that. He's so funny, isn't he? He can do deadly serious, he can do action, he can do romance. This is what a leading man should be, and there aren't enough of them around these days. So yes, it's very sad news to hear the death of Sir Sean, but we've got his legacy, we've got all these films, and Chris, we've got you to thank for telling us about these amazing films in the 70s and 80s absolutely. That very few of us have seen, so I'm looking forward to watching them.
I've just bought The Offence and Gene Hackman's
latest
book.
Oh, Rob, that's brilliant. Absolutely.
So, you know, who wins that? Me.
I'm looking forward to reviews of both those things, Rob. I really am. Dear me. And on that bombshell.
Trying to do both at the same time. Yeah. Live reporting.
Like, this is a bit grim. I need to dive back into that gritty Gene Hackman thriller. Pop Zahra's on. Just give me something. Yeah. Light relief, please. Yeah.
Fluffy.
Dearie me. No, thanks, guys. Outstanding stuff, and we will be back very soon. But yeah, this was the appropriate thing to do. We love Sean Connery, and we're going to talk about him in every episode of the Really 007 podcast, because he has such an indelible image on the series. And yeah, what a guy, Sean. We love you. We leave you now, listeners, and we can all say good night, Mr. Bond.
Really 007.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.